Buddy, I'm Beatty Cohn Vredos, and welcome, welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beatty Show. How are you all doing? It has been another almost an unbelievable week. I can hardly believe myself what I saw on television last week at the White House. The hate, the divisiveness, the anger, the disrespect. And the real questions for all of us is that what do we need to do in this country to really bring people together? And, you know, my husband and I, and Jim is a sociologist, we were talking about, you know, how the answers are so complicated, given the fact that there is so much economic and racial inequality, and people are so angry, they're scared. And yet, in any kind of a relationship, if there is a will and a way to find ways to come together, there needs to be a desire. There really needs to be motivation on the part of people to end the hate, to end the divisiveness, to end the respect. And I guess the real questions, and I ask my this as a psychotherapist and a sex therapist in therapy every single day, about how do we go about motivating people to do what is in their best interest, and of course, what is in our country's best interest, what is in all of our best interests. And there's a very beautiful, beautiful song that the cantor at our synagogue at the Jewish Center of the Hamptons sings every single Friday. And I thought that this song would be a wonderful way to set the mood for today's Ask Beatty Show. And the song is What We Need Is Love. Song that is really for all of us. We need to find ways to begin to love one another despite our political differences, despite our economic differences. There just need to be better ways than how people are handling issues, and not just political issues, but issues in people's personal lives as well. We need to find better ways to come together despite our differences, despite our beliefs, and find better ways to incorporate love and peace in our lives. And if we don't, whether we're talking about the political front or the personal front, we all suffer enormously. We suffer emotionally. We suffer psychologically, we suffer physically, and of course, we suffer as a society. So given everything that has been going on, I mean, it's going to be a year in March since the pandemic really was foisted upon us. You know, I talk about what's going on with the depression rates in this country. A third of the Americans, according to the American Medical Association, are suffering still from various degrees of depression. We're looking at anxiety. 40% of Americans are exhibiting a variety of different signs of anxiety. And every week, I track the suicide ideation and suicide rates. And here we have the nation's suicide rate reached historic highs prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, and with rates at the highest levels since World War II. And of course, we have the continued economic and social pressures have heightened the risk. Unemployment is still a major issue for hundreds of thousands of people. Businesses are continuing to close. The social isolation statistics, 52% of those now working from home remotely are feeling more anxious and worried about getting the virus. The issues of homeschooling for parents and for children It's still not clear. Should I send my children to school? Should I not send my children to school? How much longer am I going to have to be responsible for homeschooling my children? I have a job. I have to bring in money. I have to pay the rent. So there are still a lot of unknowns and a lot of issues that we are all having to deal with. And of course, the ongoing worries about healthcare, the questions of whether my insurance, if I'm lucky enough to have insurance in this country, is going to cover the costs if I get the virus. And people, as we know, are continuing to eat more and exercise less and are drinking more and are taking more medications to try and ease the depression and anxiety, which, of course, it has the opposite effect. And this is why it is just so important, whether or not it's about seeing a therapist or joining a support group or talking about your real feelings and worries to people who are willing to listen to you, and hopefully people who are able to help you. And I found in the last few weeks, I've been reading the Serenity Prayer on the Ask Beattie Show. And again, we have to be so cognizant of being able to accept the things that we cannot change. I mean, there are so many things that are really beyond our control. Who would have ever dreamed that we would be living in the midst of a pandemic? But again, my friends, it's also the courage, the will, the motivation to be able to change the things that we can. And we have the power. We actually feel sometimes that we don't, but we have personal power to do things every single day that are in our best interest. And of course, the wisdom to really know the difference. And when you listen to Gary Null's show every single day, he continues to remind us of the importance of eating well and vitamins and supplements and exercise. And these are actually things, and they don't cost any money. Certainly you can exercise, you know, in your apartment. You don't need expensive equipment, and it makes such a difference physically and emotionally and psychologically in terms of how we actually feel. So again, it's important for all of us to really embrace our own individual power. And sometimes people are feeling just the last thing in the world they're feeling is powerful. You know, there was a concept that I wanted to share with you that I actually learned about only about a week ago. I had never heard it. And that is toxic positivity. Toxic positivity. And the definition of toxic positivity is the excessive and ineffective overgeneralization of a happy, optimistic state across all situations. It results in denial and minimization and invalidation of the authentic human emotion experience. To be very, very specific about all of this, just so that you don't get caught up in the jargon. You know how you may know people who are always saying, everything is okay, I'm fine, everything is just great, when in fact, inside, things are not okay. Things are not great, whether or not it's in their individual lives, whether or not it is at work, in their relationships, with their colleagues, with their friends, with their families. And what happens, I believe, is that to deny and avoid acknowledging and expressing our authentic, normal, negative emotions, including fear, and disappointment, and anger, and betrayal, it keeps us all in a state of illusion and fantasy and is harmful. It is harmful to our relationships as well as to our own mental, emotional, and physical well-being. As I was preparing for the show today, I really wanted to ask you, a very important question. And that question has to do with honesty, but it has to do with honesty to yourself. And that is, how honest are you? Okay. Are you ready to be honest with yourself and others? Do you dare express how you are really feeling? You know, because not being honest with yourself and others, what do you think that really does? It doesn't help the situation. All it does is perpetuates a very dishonest and unhappy dynamic that you, my friend, whether you know it or not, are actually agreeing to play into. For example, how many times during the day or in your relationships do you say yes when you really mean no? How often do you do this? With whom? And how does it really affect you? Because the reality is that, of course, we can't change anybody at all. But we as individuals, we have the power to change our own behavior. And in doing so, the old dynamic invariably has to change because it changed in one part of the system. And we know this from physics, not that I know anything really about physics, but a change in one part of the system has to create changes in other parts of the system as well. And it is the question of whether or not you are wanting, whether or not you are brave to actually take back your power. Or are you going to allow others to manipulate you and hurt you? And you thinking that, well, if you just don't say anything, because none of us like conflict, but in not being honest with yourself and in not being honest with other people, what you can be sure about is that the dynamics in your relationships, whatever those relationships are, will never, never, never change. So I have some questions for you. Again, you have to think about this and be honest with yourself. Are there people in your life right now that you need to express your true feelings to? Anybody? Anybody who has hurt you? Anybody who has disrespected you? Anybody that you actually have a relationship with where in your private moments you're realizing that you are the one that is not being honest? Perhaps you've been afraid to rock the boat. Perhaps you are afraid to not be politically correct. But in not expressing your feelings honestly, it is virtually impossible to have an authentic relationship with anybody. So first of all, you need to be honest with yourself. And then, of course, the question then becomes, once you give yourself permission that you are going to change dynamics that are no longer working because you have not been willing up to this point to step up to the plate and risk letting people know how you really feel about them, how you really feel about issues, how you really feel about your relationships. So let's say you finally got to a point where you are sick of being dishonest, where you are sick of being a victim of circumstances, then the question becomes, how are you going to go about expressing your feelings? Because it is very important to find the right words at an appropriate time and place, and to be able to communicate your feelings well. So whether or not it's with your partner or a friend or a child or a family member, the goal, of course, ideally, whether or not we are talking politically or whether or not we are talking about our own personal relationships, the goal, of course, is to find a win-win resolution, which involves compromise and trade-offs. So that is the ideal, where people are motivated, where two people are motivated to try to work things out, despite the fact that there has been a lot of discord and upset in the past. Having said that, it is also very, very important for you to be careful what compromises and trade-offs you are actually willing to make. You know, we're talking about relationship compromises. I mean, I've said, and I've talked about this in my book, you know, for years, you do not want to compromise on abuse of any kind, whether or not it's substance abuse of any kind, whether it is verbal abuse, whether it is emotional abuse, psychological abuse, or physical abuse. These are things that you never, never want to compromise on, because if you do, you are going to do yourself in. And that is not at all what the object of this exercise is. So even though we are all looking, we're all looking to find ways to come together, the real $64 million question is, it's about how do we go about motivating people despite our differences, despite our political differences, despite differences across the board? How do we challenge people? And how do we motivate people that it is a better way to live if we can come together despite our differences, and that we can find ourselves living a much, much more loving and less stressful way of life than so many people, you know, are living today. So it's not about that we always have to agree, but what it is, or what I feel that it should be about, is finding ways to come together as best as we possibly can, despite our differences. And I think that that is the real challenge for society, particularly society today. And I'd be really curious what you think about some of the things that I've talked about, the call-in number here on the Progressive Radio Network, on the Ask Speedy Show right now is 888-874-4888. Because just like I do with my patients, I want you to actually take in some of the things that I am talking about. And hopefully, if they resonate with you sufficiently, to find ways of incorporating these really positive lessons into your life. Beginning today, we cannot change history, but what we can do is look back at the lessons that we have learned, lessons that have worked for us, lessons that have not worked for us, and figure out positive things that we can do that are in our best interest in order to move forward. There was a really, really terrific article in the New York Times last week, and the heading was, Forget the Resolutions, Look Back for Lessons. And this was a 2021 challenge. Identify existing good habits and build on those in the new year. The reflection that's needed right now, and I completely agree, is a real, honest, and self-compassionate look at what's been lost, who's been lost, and what it is that you want to choose to remember about 2020 lessons to be learned. And I use that phrase a lot, so that you're then going to be able to move forward in a positive way, despite what has happened to millions of people in 2020. And I think a lot of people might wonder, well, reliving much of 2020 may sound like a terrible idea. Psychologists tell us that it's actually a better way to start the new year. Looking back will help us build lessons that we've learned, and I'm sure that we've all learned a lot of lessons, maybe lessons that we never wanted to learn. And you may even discover some hidden positive habits that you did not realize that you have. And I don't think we've had the emotional appreciation that we need and deserve for the kind of year many, many people have had. And I believe, you know, whether or not we're talking about relationships or whether or not we're talking about the pandemic, I believe that reflection is a way of being ready to move forward into the new year. And again, I'm really curious what you think about all of this, because reflecting on what you accomplished in 2020 and what you missed or lost, it's also a healthier path toward self-improvement. And studies consistently show us that New Year's resolutions don't work, and that typically by February, most people have actually abandoned them. And I found this study particularly interesting, that studies show that one of the best ways to change behavior and form a new habit is to bundle it with an existing behavior, what in the science of habit formation is called stacking. And it is the reason doctors, for example, suggest taking a new medication at the same time, maybe, that you brush your teeth or have your morning coffee, because you're more likely to remember to take your pill when you piggyback it on an existing habit. So what are some of the other things that can help move forward in our lives? Building on your gratitude habit. And I know these days it's difficult for millions of people to feel gratitude, given what has happened with the virus and given the impact that the virus has had on so many people. But you remember the quarantine clapping? It became a nightly ritual in many parts of the United States and around the world. And it was really a great way for people simultaneously to come together and take part in a group ritual, because group expressions of gratitude can be empowering not only for those of us who are expressing it, but for those of us who are receiving it as well. And you might wonder, well, why does any of this matter? But numerous studies have shown that people who have a daily gratitude practice in which they consciously count their blessings tend to be happier, have lower stress levels, sleep better, and are less likely to experience depression. And this is a really interesting study that I found, that in one study, researchers recruited 300 adults, most of them college students, and they were seeking mental health counseling. And all of the volunteers, they received counseling, but for one group, added a writing exercise focused on bad experiences, while another group wrote a letter of gratitude to another person each week for 3 weeks. So what do we think happened? So a month later, those who wrote gratitude letters reported significantly better mental health. And the effect appears to last because 3 months later, the researchers scanned the brains of students while they completed a different gratitude exercise. So what did they find? So the students who had written gratitude letters earlier in the study showed greater activation in a part of the brain called the medial prefrontal cortex, believed to be related to both reward and higher level cognition. So why don't you think about, and I think this is a good idea really for all of us, how about if we all take the gratitude challenge? And this week, what if we, and then I can quiz you and I can quiz myself next week. This week, try one or more of these simple gratitude exercises. So I think that we should start small. So what about if you and me, we send an appreciative email or text, a thank a service worker, or tell your children or your spouse or a friend how they have made your life better. And a great way to develop more gratitude would be regular small steps, an extra email or note of appreciation to a colleague, or an extra in-person thank you, and a focus on how rewarding it is to brighten somebody's day. So you think about it, when is the last time, and you have to be honest with yourself, and I'm being honest with myself as well. When is the last time that you actually sent an appreciative email or text or phone call or note to someone to express your gratitude to them, to having them as a friend, to having them as a colleague, to having them as a partner, to having them as a family member. The next step, and I'm going to do this as well, is to create a gratitude reminder. So there is a doctor, and her name is Dr. McConnell, and she keeps a sticky note on her desk lamp that reads, someone, something, yourself. So what is that? It is a daily reminder to express gratitude, not only for the people, events, and gifts in her life, but also for her own accomplishments. Do you ever give yourself a pat on the back and say, you know what? I did a really, really good job. I am proud. I am proud of myself. You know, I think so often people and so many people are so very, very critical and so very self-critical and are not able to really take in their own wonderful accomplishments. So she might feel gratitude for completing a workout, for a healthy body, or for taking on a new challenge. And gratitude is really good when what you need is a belief in your ability to create a more positive future and a willingness to trust others to help you do this. Now, how other ways can we express our gratitude? Well, express your gratitude in writing. You can send emails or post gratitude on social media. Millions of people or hundreds of people or your friends on Facebook will certainly see this. Or think of someone in your life and write that person a letter of gratitude. You don't even have to mail it. Fill your letter with details describing how this person influenced your life and the things that you appreciate about him or her, or even keep a daily gratitude journal. Because you know how all of this really impacts us is that when we are able to say what we're grateful for and explain why, it shifts our attention from what's negative to what's positive in our lives. So I am going to test you next week and see whether or not, and I have to think about, you know, have I neglected to express gratitude to people in my life? I'm actually one of these people who may overdoes it. You know, I'm constantly telling my husband, Jim, you know, how grateful I am for him, how grateful I am for our life and our marriage. And I certainly do this with my daughter. And I also express gratitude to my patients. And I am grateful. I know I have a number of new patients, and it's been very risky for them to be open to really looking at their lives and their relationships in a very authentic way. It's scary. And I constantly and continually express gratitude to them for their willingness and for their inner strength, that maybe for the first time in their lives, that they are willing to look at their lives, to look at themselves, and to look at their relationships in a really, really honest way. And whether or not, you know, I was thinking about the postmen and people who are on the front line and people who help us in stores. How often do you say to these people, thank you. Thank you for packing up my groceries. Thank you for delivering the mail, whether or not it's snowing or whether or not it's raining. There are so many people that I think it's very easy for us to just not think of the fact that these people, there are many people who go to work every day, and especially in this climate, risk their lives to be there for us. And I think it's incumbent upon us, all of us, to be aware that we are not entitled, all right? But what we do need to do is to be open and willing and thoughtful and grateful, and to be able to express our gratitude to all the people in our life who help make our life easier. So I have to actually think about whether there are any people in my life who I owe that special gratitude email to, or text, or phone call. Well, moving along, there was a really interesting piece in the vow section of the New York Times. And you know what the vow section is? It tells us all of the different people who have recently married. So the headline for this particular vow announcement was Regaining His Sobriety and In Due Time Her Love. So here's the story. So the lessons from the love story of her name is Irene Sabaja and Hal Karp are many. But here are some of the more obvious. The old dating adage, right person, wrong time, is real. Forgiveness is a gift. Sharing your darkest moments can have a positive outcome, and looking for an ex online can sometimes be a good idea. So here's what happened. They fell for each other and they began dating actually a number of years ago. But what the woman, who was 26 at the time, did not know when she started to date Mr. Karp is that he was addicted to both alcohol and drugs. Cocaine was his drug of choice. Well, she was unaware of his addictions. They manifested in extreme mood swings. So what had happened was, is that they had planned an extended vacation. And what she noticed one day is that he had charged more than $10,000 on one of her credit cards. So that was the end of that relationship. But what was really, really, I think, very impressive was that Mr. Karp decided after he lost her, the woman apparently who he was supposed to love more than anything in the world, he talked about with himself, actually, if he was going to be willing to make this up to her. So he went to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1994. And apparently, through his sobriety, he was able to kick his drug and alcohol habits. And he had discussed at AA his willingness and wanting to reach out to the woman that he loved and really express his remorse and try to make amends. But apparently, and this was something that I actually researched yesterday, different factions of AA have said things like, you know what, you've already ruined this person's life once, so that the best thing you can do is to leave that person alone. I don't agree really with that. I think that's a very blanket statement. I think there's all kinds of contingencies, all kinds of things that really have to be looked into before anybody, should be able to make a statement like that. So in the meantime, both married other people, but they discovered themselves online. I mean, these days you can check out anybody online, past relationships, current relationships. It's amazing who you can find, people from your past, people who just, it is with Google and with the computer. So in any case, they decided that they wanted to meet again. And, he was, of course, very apologetic, and in being very apologetic, he actually even returned the $10,000 that he had put on her credit card so many years ago. And they got married recently, and they are moving forward with their lives. And what his now wife said is that his apology was a gift that she never, ever thought that she would receive in her lifetime. So it was not going back simply to an old relationship. The dynamic of the relationship was obviously very new. And she took some time, and wisely so, to assess who her partner now really was. And I think that it was so important that he was willing to make amends. Because one of the telltale symptoms of alcohol or drug addiction is behaving in ways that go against your personal values and standards. And that's why, actually, the 12-step recovery process includes the practice of recognizing how your behavior has harmed others and seeking to repair the mistakes and damages caused during your act of addiction. And I think that this can be done whether or not you have a chemical addiction or not. Making amends, if you are really serious about trying to repair a relationship or relationships. So here are some of the steps, and I thought that this article was a really good article that all of us could think about, whether or not we have alcohol or drug problems or not. But it's really about what we can do if we're really interested in repairing a relationship. It's about making amends. So the first step, and think about this, are there people in your life who you would really like to make amends with? And if so, are you actually willing to follow some of these guidelines? So the first step is to make a list of all persons that we have harmed and become willing to make amends to them, to all of them. start off with the top priority people who perhaps you have hurt. And hopefully your list isn't too long, but if it is, you can go down the list one by one. The second step is to make direct amends to such people wherever possible, except, and this is an except that's really important, when to do so would injure them or others further. Because this cannot just be about you. This is about your thinking of the impact of your reaching out to them to make amends and what that impact is going to be for them. So let's look at what is a direct amend. All right, in the 12-step recovery program from alcohol or other drug addictions, a direct amend refers to the act of personally addressing issues with people who have been harmed by our behavior or our treatment of them as a result, of course, in the 12-step program, as a result of addiction, I would say, as the result of anything that has actually caused harm and pain to another human being. So the practice involves going back to those individuals to acknowledge the harm or hurt that we have caused them and demonstrating our changed behaviors in order to provide them with the opportunity to heal. So whenever possible, a direct amend is made face to face, even though it may be difficult to do, easier to do on a text, easier to do in email. But face-to-face is the best rather than over the phone or by asking someone else to apologize on your behalf. It is about you. It is about you taking the reins and doing what you really need to do if you are serious about making amends and not just making a cheap apology. So what's the difference? Talking about apologies, what's the difference between making amends and offering an apology? Well, think of amends as actions taken that demonstrate your new way of life in recovery, whereas apologies are basically words. And of course, I have said, and I remember saying this to my daughter, Jordana, forever, beginning when she was a little girl, is that it is not what you say, it is what you do. You know, Shakespeare talked about words, words, words. I mean, words are important, but it is the action. It is the action that is going to determine whether we are serious with our words. So when you make amends, you acknowledge and you align your values to your actions by admitting wrongdoing and then living by your principles. Okay? So in addiction, our actions and intentions, obviously, they're not aligned. We're, you know, our intentions may be to stop drinking or stop using, but our behavior is doing something else. So for example, we might intend, and this is important, you know, again, it's not what we think, it's not what we fantasize, it is what we do. So here's a really great example that we might intend to go to a friend's birthday party, but in actuality, we fail to show up for the event. So while we might apologize later for missing the party, our apology consists of words rather than actions or changed behavior. It's like, yes, I've heard all of these apologies before. What are you going to do differently? And those words ring hollow when we repeatedly break our promises. And it's the small little promises that are so very important. You know, think about today. Did you promise somebody to do something? And we can find a million reasons why we can't do it, why we didn't do it. And yet, you know, when you're with somebody who continues to make promises and doesn't follow through, you know how that makes you feel. You know what happens to your trust. So to truly make amends, we have to offer more than words. Again, it's not what we say, it is what we do. So in recovery of various different kinds, our actions and intentions are aligned. And an example would be telling someone how sorry you are that you stole from them and then actually giving back what you took, which is exactly what happened with the couple who found themselves after so many years when Hal Karp went to AA. He got his life together. He did the work. And he repaid his bride with the money that he stole from her. So he put his words into action. And yet there are times when direct amends are not advisable. And when are those times? And I think that we have to look at those times so that when we make amends, except when we do so would injure them or others. We don't want our actions to cause further damage, harm, or stress. And also we might owe amends to people who we can't reach. And in those cases, we can make amends in a broader sense by taking action, like maybe donating money, volunteering our time, or providing care. We can also make amends by living very purposefully within the bounds of our principles. And this is known as making living amends. I love that because, for example, if we hurt people with our lying and we cannot make amends without further injuring them, we would make living amends by making a decision to behave and communicate with complete honesty. Because it's also really, really important to take great care when making amends to someone who is in active addiction, because our primary responsibility is to safeguard our own health and recovery from substance abuse or from other kinds of behavior that can really put us back. So no matter how much we feel the need to make things right, forcing another person to meet with us or hear from us is not part of the steps. When those we've hurt are not able or willing to accept our amends, we can still move in a positive general direction by taking intentional steps to be of service to others, are making living amends. It's true. We don't always get what we want. And there are some relationships where it is not going to be possible to make amends. And it is not going to be possible at all to move forward, you know, with some kind of a relationship with people who we have hurt. Because it's important to note that making amends is for the person. Yes, it also helps us, but it is really for the person that we have hurt. And we can partake in the process to clean up our side of the street, but we do not make amends to clear our conscience or undo our feelings of guilt. Because if someone does not want to hear from us as much as we would like to be able to express our feelings and to apologize and to make, you know, some really concrete amends, we have to respect that and do our best to move forward with our own recovery. Because it's important to have a plan in place before we reach out. We can't know for certain how another person is going to respond or even how the interaction might affect us emotionally. So we need to talk. We need to talk to ourselves, and maybe we need to talk to a counselor to be able to plan in the event that you do reach out and that things are not going well. You know, as with alcohol and other drugs, we are also powerless over other people. And this is something that I say over and over and over again, that we cannot control how others respond, whether they will forgive or whether they will hold on to negative feelings or resentments. Because in the end, we are not seeking forgiveness. We are seeking accountability for our own actions and holding ourselves to the standards of our own values. And that's something that I think that we really do. We really, really do need to understand that we are absolutely powerless. It doesn't matter who we are, how many degrees we have, what our motivation is that we cannot change anybody at all. The only person that we have the capability of changing is ourselves. And those are decisions. Those are decisions that we need to make. So, you know, when I hear in relationships all the time, I want him to change or I want her to change. You know, my response to that is, what are you planning to do today? As an example, if you are dealing with somebody who is disrespectful, who is emotionally abusive or physically abusive or emotionally or physically unavailable, because if we are looking to change others without changing ourselves, we are going to be incredibly frustrated and we are not going to ever get the results that we are hoping for. So it's really, you know, it all kind of comes back to us. What are we prepared to do? What are we not prepared to do? What are we prepared to accept? What are we not prepared to accept? And in the final analysis, in the final analysis, the only person who we have the power to change is ourselves. And of course, if you need help, if anybody needs help in becoming a more powerful person, in taking back their power, or even in getting their power, I hope that you're going to give yourselves permission to really reach out and ask for help. And, you know, I say this every single week here on the Ask Beattie Show. Life is so complicated and so challenging that we need to all give ourselves permission and acknowledge the fact that we do not need to navigate this world. We do not need to navigate our problems and our issues on our own. So here we are again, my friends. An hour has just about come and gone here on the Ask Beattie Show, and I hope that this has been helpful. I love to get your texts and your emails and your comments, and we can discuss and we can debate, and that's how we all grow. And of course, I want to leave you with my two weekly messages. And of course, the first message, and those of you who've been listening to the show, you should know this message, is to do everything that you can possibly do to love yourself, to do what is in your best interest. And of course, secondarily, we all need to do a much, much, much better job in taking care of each other and loving each other. And I leave you with my favorite song, and that is, what the world needs now is love, sweet love.